Hey, this is Pastor Ricky Ortiz at MetaChurch, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into our podcast and supporting our ministry. If you'd like to learn more about MetaChurch, you can visit us online at meta.church, and we're praying this message inspires you and encourages you to pursue your relationship with Jesus. Hey, so we are in the final week of our Got Me Shook series, and I thought, you know, this being the fourth week, that it'd be good maybe to do like a quick kind of recap, going back to week one, kind of, you know, level setting of where we've been. So if you remember back to week one, we went, you know, like talking about this idea of crazy, and we talked about these demon-possessed people and how Peter in Matthew chapter 8, Matthew records this account of Jesus and Peter hanging out at his house, and sick people are coming to be healed, and then, you know, it kind of got like next level, and demon-possessed people started, you know, to get brought to Jesus, and we talked about how crazy, you know, it was when demon-possessed people were involved in the story, and but then what was even crazier was that those crazy people were brought, that someone actually cared enough to think about, to see the need and say, you know what, there's someone I know who can do something about this. And so actually how we'd be crazy not to care. We'd be the crazy ones if we didn't care. So that was week one. Then week two, we talked about the bromance, right? And we talked about these four guys who were, you know, willing to overcome any sort of obstacle to get their paralyzed friend to Jesus. You know, they trekked them from a distance away. They went past the religious leaders and kind of worked through that. And then they got through the crowd, got onto the roof, dug through the roof, lowered their friend to Jesus, all so that he could be healed, all so that he could have an experience of life change and transformation. And so that was week two. Then last week, we moved into this whole weird situation of a blind man getting spit on the eyes by Jesus. And this kind of progressive situation where the man was brought to Jesus in the town of Bethsaida, and how Jesus, you know, cared for him and led him out of that place so that he could go to a place where he could actually be healed. And then this progressive situation that requires our patience. Because it's easy for us when we're praying for someone, when we're praying for a spouse or a friend or a family member or a coworker, and we're asking for God to bring the breakthrough, how easy it is to get discouraged because it's not happening as immediate or on the timeline that we envisioned or that we wanted. And so that was last week's message. And then, you know, these first 3 weeks were really all about kind of challenge and inspiration. But today's message is about application. It's about putting these things together. It's about kind of jumping into it. And so today we're going to, you know, kind of look at a fourth example, a fourth situation of a bringer, a connector, an introducer, someone who decided to make a difference or make an impact by connecting people to Jesus or by connecting Jesus to people. And I think as we look into this, we'll find some helpful tips. But I think the thing that I kind of want you to walk away with, in fact, if I were to give this sermon a title, what I would title it is Why This Matters. Why This Matters. In case you've come for 3 weeks, or you watched for 3 weeks, or you've experienced this for 3 weeks, and you still don't know why this matters, today I'm going to make it absolutely clear why this matters. Because let's be honest, if we talk about this for 3 weeks, I don't know if we talk about anything for 3 weeks, or today, counting today, 4 weeks, and we hear it, and we amen it, and we agree with it, but we don't live it, then you've wasted your time listening, and I've wasted my time talking. And so this whole message is about putting the pieces together and recognizing why it matters and now what to do with it. And where to go from here. Because I think the thing that we'll realize by today is that, or by the end of today, is that honestly, and I say this in response to myself, that after today, there's not going to be any room to hide. And I think that's a good thing. Because the clarity and the simplicity of what's going to be shared with you today is going to create a situation where you're going to have to decide, am I going to live this out? Am I going to apply this? Or am I going to blatantly ignore it? And that's always challenging. That's always difficult because you think, well, I don't know how or why or who and all those things, and we'll get there. But I'm just kind of like forewarning you, if you need to leave, then probably now is a good time. Just kidding. It's not going to be mean. I think we're actually going to be empowered. I think we're going to be encouraged. And my goal and my hope and my conviction is that by the end of today, while we're forced to or kind of led to a place where we have to make a determination or make a decision, my hope and my belief is that we'll actually make a decision that says, yeah, I'm going to pursue this because I'm empowered to do so versus, I don't know if I want to do that. And so we're going to jump right into it. If you have a Bible, you can go ahead and flip over to John chapter 4. We're going to pick up in verse 25 in just a moment. But before we get to verse 25, I'm going to kind of set up the story. It's a very familiar story. And if you couldn't pick up on this, then you're going to know, or if you did pick up on this, I should say, then you're going to know it's the story of the woman at the well. the woman who had five husbands, and she was with the sixth, but he wasn't the one. And so, punny, right? That's good. Yeah, another one for you. Chalk it up, baby. So don't worry. This is the last week of the series. We'll go back to normal reality next week. But John chapter 4, so here's what's happening, okay? Jesus and his disciples are down in the city of Jerusalem, and they're going to make their way back to Galilee. Galilee's in the north, and as I shared before, throughout this series even, Galilee to Jerusalem is about a five-day journey. But in between Jerusalem in the south and Galilee in the north, there was this region, a place, a geographic region called Samaria. And Samaria was a place inhabited by Samaritans. And Samaritans were actually half Jews and half kind of pagan or half Babylonian or half Assyrian, whatever, you know, epic they kind of were born. But they weren't like full-blooded Jews. In fact, they were kind of regarded as sellouts. The reason they became kind of a half-breed, if you will, excuse that language, but the reason they were viewed as a half-breed was because they actually sold out their Jewish brothers and sisters to the Babylonian Empire for protection. And so this region of Samaria is where they inhabited. It's where they had protection. But Jews despised Samaritans. They hated them. In fact, there would be no understatement to say that they regarded Samaritans the way that many people or most of us would regard terrorists. And so Jews were so committed to avoiding and neglecting them and not interacting with them that on the way from Jerusalem to Galilee, they would hike around Samaria. They would add an additional day to their journey and hike through the wilderness to avoid coming into contact with people in Samaria. Jesus, on the other hand, because he's always willing to engage the uncomfortable, tells his boys, hey, we got to go to Galilee, but we're going to go through Jerusalem. In fact, John writes, he says, Jesus said, we have to go through Samaria. So as they're journeying through Samaria, they arrive to a village called Sychar. And as they arrive to this village, they're just on the outskirts of the village. Jesus is hungry. The disciples are hungry. Jesus is thirsty as well. He sends the disciples to go get food, and he decides he's going to turn up to a watering well where he can get some water. There he encounters a woman, and as if it wasn't bad enough, you know, that she was Samaritan, she was a woman, which again, in Jewish culture, they don't entertain women, they don't engage with women, men did not talk to women, they avoided them at all costs. So Jesus sees this woman, and he approaches her and asks her to get him water. She like kind of freaks out and is like, you're a man, why are you talking to me? You Jews don't associate with the Samaritans. And then they get in this conversation about life and general stuff. And then they go from a regular conversation about water to a spiritual conversation about faith. And now just kind of think for a moment. This kind of struck me as I was preparing this message. Imagine having a faith conversation with the object of your faith. Imagine having a faith conversation, let me put it in simple terms. Imagine having a faith conversation with Jesus, the person that you have this faith in. What would he say to you? What would he encourage you in? Where would you feel challenged? Where would you feel vulnerable? Where would you feel like, oh, that wasn't good? You know, like imagine having that conversation. That's what this woman is having. She's having this conversation with Jesus about faith and doesn't realize she's talking to the object of faith. And so they're having this conversation. And then Jesus, in the course of this dialogue, it reveals or kind of shares. He's like, hey, you know what? I know enough about you. I know that you've been with five guys. You've been married five times and also divorced five times. And you're with the sixth guy, but he ain't the one. And she is just like stunned, flabbergasted, right? And she just couldn't believe it and realizes in that moment that this man is somebody different. In fact, she assumes that he's a prophet. And so she says, you must be a prophet because no one else could know. And so Jesus, in the process of this dialogue, starts revealing some more things about faith and spirituality. And that's where we pick up in verse 25. Okay, so here's what the woman says. The woman said, I know the Messiah is coming, the one who is called the Christ. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then the bomb drops, right? Verse 26, then Jesus told her, I am the Messiah. And just then his disciples came back and they were shocked to find him talking to a woman, but none of them had the nerve to ask, what do you want with her? Or why are you talking to her? But let me just pause real quick. I had this thought this morning. Yeah, that friend that like, they'll retell a story as if they were the saint and didn't do anything wrong. And you're like, no, that's not how it went. That's basically what John, he just like kind of wrote himself out as. They were shocked. They had no idea. And they didn't want to ask. Like John tried to kind of like plead the fifth and make it look like, no, I knew what Jesus was doing. I totally understood. I wasn't shocked at all. Like it just hit me this morning. I'm like, man, what a bum. I got friends like that. I've been that guy. You know, retelling a story to make myself look better in the situation. So John goes on, right? He writes himself out of the story. Verse 28, the woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? Verse 30. So the people came streaming from the village to see him. We're going to drop down to verse 39 and continue there. It says this, many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus because the woman had said, he told me everything I ever did. And when they came out to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. So he stayed for 2 days, long enough for many more to hear this message and believe. Then they said to the woman, now we believe, not just because of what you told us, but because we have heard him ourselves. Now we know that he is indeed the Savior of the world. You see, this woman had a profound encounter with the Savior. She had a revelation that changed the game. In fact, I'm going to use that word quite a bit today, but when I use the word revelation, here's what I mean. A revelation is a real understanding of who Jesus is that actually leads to real change in your life. Because if you don't have a real understanding of who Jesus is, or if you have, quote, a real understanding of who Jesus is, and it doesn't lead to real change, then you didn't have a revelation. You just soaked in information. Because revelation of Jesus leads to transformation with Jesus. And so this woman had a revelation where she recognized who this person is and said, something is different about me, and I'm going to respond to that difference. And this revelation was impactful. In fact, her revelation led to a revival. It led to a whole village being transformed. It led to a whole village being significantly changed. But there's something about her. There's something about her as the connector, as the introducer, as the bringer, as the person who just kind of saw it that really stood out. And what I want to do is kind of just share quickly with you guys three thoughts or three notes about her revelation. And so I'll give it to you straight. Here's the first one. Her revelation was urgent. Her revelation was urgent. You know, verse 28 says that as soon as Jesus revealed himself as the Messiah, she ran back to the village. Immediately, John writes, she went back to the village. There was something about meeting Jesus. There was something about encountering Jesus. There was something about this revelation that caused her, that almost forced her to have to respond immediately. There wasn't a delay. There wasn't waiting. There wasn't sitting around. It was in the moment. In fact, it was so much in the moment that John notes that the water jug she came to the well with, the one that she went there for, the one that she filled up, she actually abandoned by the well to go back into the village. Her purpose for showing up to the well was completely abandoned and forgotten because there was a greater purpose she had discovered. And so this woman recognized the urgency of the situation, and she had to go do something about it. She had to act on it. She was, you know, transformed in that moment, and there wasn't a sitting around or thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to stay the same, or I'll put this off till next week. It was, no, this happened now. I've got to do something with it. And that's no different, honestly, than anything that we do, right? If you go to a store, ladies or guys, I like to shop. I'm not trying to offend anyone. I shop and I spend money too, and I'm impulsive. So you go to a store, there's a deal, right? Or like the store's having some mega sale. Better yet, you get an email about your favorite store having a sale. Like, what are you doing? Clicking on that website? You're looking and you're scrolling through. You're showing up in the store. You're trying on things. You're buying things. And then if it's a good enough deal, you're like, you know what? This is too good to pass up. I've got to like broadcast it. I've got to tell someone, or I've got to show it off because I want to wear what I just got. And if someone says, it's funny how we do this, right? Like, someone's like, wow, that's really nice. Oh, girl, I got this at such and such place. It was this much. They didn't ask about where you got it. They didn't ask how much it cost you. They didn't ask, you know, if they have other sizes available. They didn't ask how long the sale's going. But we just start broadcasting it. It's like urgent, right? When you experience change and transformation, you all of a sudden, you just got to tell everybody. You just got to move on it. There's an immediacy to it. And it's no different if it's food, if it's, you know, clothing, if it's shopping. But when something significant happens, there's an urgency to it, right? When something significant happens in life, good or bad, and there's an urgency to our response. And it was no different for this woman. The second point to make about her revelation was that it was personal. You know, think back to the first thing she shared with her village in verse 29. When she went back to this village, she said, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. It was about her experience. It was about her encounter. It was about her relationship. It was about her story. She didn't get in this debate about creation versus evolution. She didn't start quoting scripture verses. She didn't start, you know, battling hot topics like abortion and anything else. She just went into her story, her personal story, her personal revelation, what she encountered, what she experienced, what she benefited from. And it was this personal thing. And so she had to go out and say, come listen to a man or see a man, meet a man who told me everything I ever did. Now, I don't know if Jesus told her everything she ever did, but here's what I know. She felt understood. Because there was no shame in her story anymore. There was power in it. And I think about this context of, you know, having faith conversations. And I think about this, you know, series about telling people about Jesus and kind of, you know, living out our faith and being the people who connect people and bring people and the transformation that it produces in them, but the transformation that it produces in us that leaves us shook. When that happens and those encounters happen, I think we always think about, well, what about I don't have all the answers? What if I don't know all the verses? What if I don't have the rebuttals? And the fact of the matter is most people don't actually even care about that. They just want to know, how has it impacted you and has it made any sort of difference? Is it personal? Yeah. Not do you go to church, but is it real? Mm-hmm. Does it transform how you think? Does it transform how you live? Does it transform how you respond? That's what they're interested in. They want to know the personal story, because the fact of the matter is, if it's not personal, if your revelation of Jesus isn't impactful on how you live or who you become, people don't honestly care. Because it's the same as anything else that they can find anywhere else. So it has to be personal. Then thirdly, I'll share this with you. Her revelation was public. Obviously, she didn't keep her experience to herself. She didn't keep this encounter private. She didn't try to keep it on the down low. She didn't try to keep it on the hush-hush. She wasn't interested. She just went back and started proclaiming about what happened. Was it personal? Yes. But was it private? No. It was public. It was something that had to be taken to the masses, something within her that felt compelled to say, you know, I've got to let everyone know about this person. Everyone that's willing to listen, everyone that I can engage in this conversation has to hear about this person who told me everything I ever did. And he's possibly and probably the Messiah, the one that we've been believing for, the one we've been hoping for, the one we didn't know was coming, but you're so desperately in search of. That's the person that I just encountered. And I've got to tell this to everyone else. And there was no shame. There was no regret. And there was absolutely no silence. And that's where it gets tricky. That's where it gets challenging. You know, that's the part that I think makes it hard, because, you know, we feel the pressure of that, or the weight of that, the fear, the apprehension, the worry. But real quick, I want everyone to grab your phone. Just everyone grab your phone. You probably won't hear that in church a lot. But go ahead and grab your phone. Go ahead and unlock it. And then just kind of swipe however many swipes it takes. You just kind of scroll back and forth through your apps. And here's probably what you'll observe, but here's kind of the crazy thing. Because everyone you know and everyone you care about is available right here. Either through a contacts app or a social media app of some kind. Like, everything that is important to us, or everyone that's important to us, is available like this quickly. We don't have to run back to a village. We don't have to run back. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to text everyone you know about Jesus, so don't panic. I see some people like, oh my gosh, I'm like, put it down, like trying to slide their phone. Oh, I forgot it. Like, that's not what I'm going to do. Don't worry. But everyone we know is available to us as quickly and as easily as this. And I think I'm going to kind of talk a little bit. I felt led to just talk a little bit about social media, because I love social media. I use it all the time. In fact, I use it so much that I had to put limits on my phone so that I don't use it more than I should. But social media is one of those things that, honestly, it's just a public broadcasting tool. Even if your profile is private, it's still public to the people that you've allowed it to. And so on social media, we use it to publicly broadcast things that matter to us. We use it to broadcast where we're eating. We use it to broadcast where we're hanging out. We use it to broadcast who we're hanging out with. We use it to broadcast random things that are funny, that make us laugh. We use it to broadcast something that's significant or important. And we broadcast every single day. Most of us use social media. And if we're not broadcasting something, we're watching what other people are broadcasting. But every single day, we do that right through this device. And for the most part, we're willing to share publicly things that are significant. But then it's crazy how you can look at something like this and look at a profile or look at someone's, you know, postings and public declarations, and they say, well, Jesus matters, God matters to me, but not as much as that meal you had at that restaurant the other night. That meal that you're going to eat, digest, and dispose of. You'll post about that, but you won't post about someone who supposedly has transformed your life and has the potential to transform everyone else's lives. And then it's like, oh, well, how do I tell my friends about Jesus? And you're like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but I'm guessing the reason you say, well, that's uncomfortable. That's not part of my brand. Well, that's not the word I would use, but that's what we're protecting. Our perception, our brand. And I'm not telling you, I'm not judging everyone who you've posted, you've not posted. That's not what this is about. I'm just simply saying this is a simple tool we have available to us to publicly broadcast what matters. And the fact is that sometimes it's not that it doesn't matter, it just doesn't matter enough. And so I'm not saying, hey, post about Meta Church today. That's not what I need. I don't need you to retweet anything I put. I don't need you to do any of that. I just want you to feel the weight of, man, this is something that I have an opportunity to do. I say matters, but it doesn't really reflect itself in the way I live my life or share it publicly. And so rather than, you know, kind of get hung up on this, I think the thing that I wanted to kind of talk about pertaining to this woman is that there's threefold, you know, three aspects of this, right? There was urgency, it was personal to her, and it was public. And throughout the course of the series, every week I've kind of shared a different story of someone. And I thought rather than me talk about someone else, I actually want to introduce a gunner over here in our midst that you may not know of, but Amy, to come up here. And I've asked Amy to join in on a little bit of an interview with us. So everyone give Amy a round of applause. I'm going to grab a chair. Amy, so here's why I asked Amy to do this, because Amy represents those three things. The urgency, let's scoot over this way just in case you're not in the camera.
Can't have that.
There you go. So a couple weeks ago, we were texting me, her, and Krista on something. She's like, you know, I was running on this like 13-mile run, and I was running next to an atheist, and I was going to tell him about Jesus. I was like, you can talk and run at the same time? I'm like, I can't breathe and run at the same time. And so, and she's like, you know, I've committed, I'm going to tell 100 people about Jesus. And this is the first one, so 99 more to go. And then whenever I hit 100, I'm going to go beyond that. I'll figure out the next number, whatever. And so it was just like this stellar kind of, you know, commitment. But my guess is that you probably didn't start that way. And so I thought it'd be good for you not to speak about how do you tell 100 people about Jesus, but just kind of to help level with us and help us understand, because I think all of us, myself included, could benefit to hear kind of what's encouraged you in this. So just from the start, like what motivates you to share your faith so boldly?
I think first I was really convicted that I wasn't doing it. It was very clear, like, that God wants us, like, our purpose is to spread his gospel.
Yeah.
And if you truly believe, like, your life is better and other people's life could be better because you know Jesus and you're not sharing it, then you have to, like, check yourself a bit.
Yeah.
And so I just became really convicted that I was, especially in the city where nobody knows Jesus and I'm with all these people, and if I keep my mouth shut, it says something about how much I care about them.
Yeah.
Not share what I know. So
yeah, so it's not just about your care for God, but how you care for other people. That's really good. And then secondly, when you begin these faith-based conversations, I mean, do you wait till mile 7 when they're kind of tired and more vulnerable, or, you know,
I can't talk anymore.
So what's your approach, and does that change or vary based off of the nature of the conversation or the nature of the person?
I am not telling all my running friends about Jesus, so don't, if you want to run with me, you're good. But I think more it's just, I kind of decided with God first that I wanted to do this. That
yeah.
I just, like, one day I was like, wrote down the index card you gave out. I was like, I'm gonna tell 100 people about Jesus because I realized I'm not doing that. And so I really think God brings you people to tell him, right? And
yep.
So I mean, it was a snowy day that particular day I was talking to you about, and nobody showed up to this run group. Like, my friends that I normally run with, they weren't there. And so it was just me and this guy, and we were just running, and he was talking about, asking where he's from, and he was from Iran, and I asked him if he goes back, and he's like, I can't go back because I'm married, and I've decided to be an atheist, and my wife as well, and if I go back, they'll make us adopt the national religion.
Oh, wow.
And I just, like, in my old me would have said, oh, that's really sad, I'm sorry to not see your family anymore, but I just asked him, I was like, why are you, you know, what brought you to the place where you don't believe in God anymore? And I think it's that, it's just listening for the doors that maybe God has put in front of you and saying,
that's
I'm
going
to take this and I'm going to step into it. I'm not going to be scared.
Yeah, that's
and
so good.
And worst case, we switch the subject to running shoes next mile, you know, but like, let's just ask. And, you know, it's amazing how he was just really open with me about what made him believe there wasn't a God. And then how he asked me, like, why is this really real to you?
Yeah.
And so it was definitely something God arranged, something that you can't look for yourself.
Right. And I think that what I love about that is that kind of what I picked up on is, you weren't just saying, oh, well, that's stupid, why are you an atheist? You're like, no, what led you to that point?
Yeah.
What led you to a point that you'd be willing to abandon family,
country
region to something? And I think the takeaway for all of us, everyone has a journey.
Right.
And so if we can press into their journey and understand where they're coming from, where they've been, and where they're headed, it gives us kind of a point of opportunity to maybe speak into that, even if it doesn't seem like running, talking about atheism on a snowy day, and Jesus is the most compatible type of ingredient. So, and then I guess lastly, what would you say, like what encouragement would you offer to anyone, any of us who find it, you know, difficult or maybe overwhelming to express our faith in a kind of verbal way?
I think, you know, if it's real to you and you can tell people about what's happening in your life, that's a lot easier to talk to than to say, like, this is the 7 points that you need to go to heaven. You know what I'm
right.
saying? So if it's real enough to you and you become authentic to the person you're talking to, then they're going to hear what you say and they'll see that that's something that's really happened in your life.
Right.
And they're more interested in the story than in the facts. Yeah. I mean, this guy that I was talking to, he led off by saying, like, people that believe that, they're crazy. They don't believe in science, you know?
Yeah.
But he was interested in hearing what my story was because I was an authentic human.
Yeah, that's so good.
And so, yeah, just relating what you know is true and how God's changed your life will impact other people, even if they're not interested in becoming a Christian. They're interested in your story,
yep.
and that's how God can work within that. So.
I love it. So good. Give Amy a round of applause. Thank you, Amy. I wanted her to share because I think it's so encouraging when it's, quote, a normal person. And so when it's not your pastor telling you this is what you should do, or when it's like, well, that's easy because you gave your life to Jesus and sold out. Well, technically, we all gave our lives to Jesus, and our commitment to him was that we'd sell out for him. And so with that, again, you know, a series like this, messages like this, it's really easy whenever something like this is preached, you know, that several questions kind of surface. And usually there's kind of a couple at the top that bubble up to the top. And I guess if you were to give them an order, number 1A would be, well, who do I talk to about this? Who do I approach about this? And the short answer is anyone. Honestly, anyone. But I also realize that's maybe not the most helpful or practical answer because people are like, well, anyone. You've had that answer your whole life. We've known that. And it's not always the easiest thing to answer. So I wanted to share some tools that I think are helpful and they've helped me in my experience. And so I'm going to give you 3 words. They'll come up here, tension, trouble, transition. Tension, trouble, transition. In my experience, what I found is that there are people with different levels of receptivity to not just believing in Jesus, but engaging in a conversation about Jesus. And typically what I found is that people who are in one of these three kind of seasons or situations are more receptive to engaging a faith conversation, a faith-based conversation. It doesn't mean, again, that they're going to respond or transform or accept it. But when I'm thinking about who, the first place I start is I look for people in my life who are experiencing some sort of tension, stress at work, stress at home, you know, some sort of, maybe they're in a high-performing job and it's demanding and exhausting, and they're just kind of, you know, overwhelmed by that. Then I go, you know, or then I look people in trouble. Maybe there's some sort of illness. A physical illness. Someone just got diagnosed with cancer. Someone just found out they have a disease that they can live with, but it's still a disease or an illness. Maybe they have a mental illness, anxiety, depression. And so there's some sort of trouble. Maybe they just got laid off. There's financial trouble. They just lost their job, and they don't know how they're going to make ends meet, or they're wondering what's going to happen next, or how they're going to come provide for themselves or their families. And so trouble kind of steps in. And then transition. People who are changing seasons, you know, maybe they're moving to the city for college. Maybe they moved here for a job. Maybe they're moving not just from the city, but they're moving apartments to a different neighborhood. Maybe they got promoted. They got demoted. Those are all transitions. Maybe they're changing life stages. They're just got engaged, you know, just got married, just having a child, maybe just lost the child. You know, it could be that someone's in all three of these things, but it doesn't necessitate that. But if I can identify the people in my life that God has placed, like Amy was saying, the opportunities that I look for, it tends to be that God will place people who are experiencing one of these three things. And what I found is that that person is often looking for answers or solutions that are beyond themselves. The reason why they're willing to entertain a conversation about faith or Jesus is because they're struggling to figure things out by themselves. And they're like, there's got to be something, someone out there, a guru, a self-help book, anything that can help me figure out how to get through this season of life. And so if I can identify those people and build relationship and go the journey with them, then what I find is that when it gets to a place of having a faith-based conversation, they're more inclined to at least want to listen and respond and see why it's relevant to my life and then consider if it'd be relevant to theirs. So that's 1A. If this is 1A, who do I talk to you then? Well, before I go there, I guess the question I'd put to you is, who in your life fits this criteria? Who do you know that's experiencing, you know, one of these three things or maybe all three of these things? And so this is question 1A. Then the second question that comes up is, okay, well, how do I do this? How do I go about this? And how do I engage in these conversations? And since I gave you 3 T's, I thought I'd give you another set of alliteration. So I'll give you three W's. Words, works, wonders. How do I talk about it? Words, works, wonders. So words are just the things you say. And how you have conversation with them and the way you say things. And listen, I'm all for being kind. I'm all for being gracious. I'm all for being encouraging and using my words to do those things. But this is explicitly about sharing the gospel. It's more than just good words. It's about true faith. Because the gospel isn't just good. The gospel is explicit. And it's clear and it's black and white. So what I'm talking about when I say words is not just, hey, you look nice today, and being an encouraging person. We should do that. But that's the baseline. What I'm talking about is, hey, this is my faith, and this is why it matters, and this is why I gave my life to Jesus, or this is how God intervenes in my life and how God blesses or helps or guides me through uncertainties. So the actual words that you say, and I think, again, this is the tricky part because we always feel kind of like the, oh, I got to clam up on this. But I kind of thought about this, and I want to kind of flip it and give you a different perspective, okay? Because when we think of the world, and when I say the world, what I'm talking about are people who aren't in a relationship with Jesus or aren't in pursuit of a you know, divine relationship of any kind. So people who are living apart from God and don't care. Okay, when we think of them and we think about the things that they publicly declare, their folly, their sin, the things that most people would find shame about, you know, how hammered they got over the weekend, how many hookups they've had, who they cheated, you know, what process they circumvented. Who they got, you know, who they had to throw under the bus so they could get their promotion. When you think about those types of things, the world is completely unfiltered. Yet we, as Christians, who have something that we should be proud of, are completely filtered in our words. They're unfiltered about their lifestyle. They're unfiltered about the things they do. They're unfiltered about the challenges or the issues or the things that they shouldn't be proud of. And yet when it comes to us saying about, hey, I believe in this God who loves you, who died for you, who gave his life for you so that you can step into a transformative relationship with him. It's changed me and it could change you. You may not want it, but I at least wanted to talk about it with you. When we get to that point, we say, oh, no, well, I don't want to offend someone. I don't want to step on any toes. I know my boss isn't for this. Or I know that, you know, this isn't really acceptable or socially it's going to, you know, kind of put me in a weird situation. But our words matter. Our actual words, actually speaking these things out. Secondly, our works. This is how we show them the gospel. This is how we live it out before them. When someone does us wrong, maybe it has nothing to do with that person, but when we're not treated right, when we're disrespected, when someone does something against us, instead of flipping a lid and cursing them out or getting upset about that situation, handling it and taking it in with maturity and saying, you know what? I don't like that. I deserve better than that. I shouldn't be treated that way. But the least I can do is be respectful and have a conversation with that person versus just getting upset and talking trash about them and gossiping them to my coworker. So that's part of our works. And then it's the way we serve people. It's the way we love people. This is how we talk about the gospel. Then the wonders. These are the things that God does for all people, and it's attributing them back to God. You know, someone gets a promotion, someone gets a raise. Man, that's awesome. I'm celebrating with you. God's looking out for you. Simple statement like that. It's attributing their wonder, their miracle, their kind of unexpected situation back to God. There's the wonders of how we approach, you know, what happens in our own lives. You get a promotion, you get engaged, you get a situation that benefits you, and you give credit back to God. And so it's just revealing the goodness of God in everyday circumstances and situations. And so if we can approach it with this way, if we can identify, okay, there's people with tension or trouble or are in transition, and if I can use my words and the works and the wonders, these things are going to come back to God. And I think the reason why this is significant or the reason why I want to show you why this matters is because I think there's more to it than maybe we kind of realize. And I just got this little chain just to kind of illustrate this for you. Because I think if you would envision between every person and God, there's a chain linking them to God. And you say, God's on one end, and here's, you know, the person that's on your heart, the person that's in your life. And it's not just that they're linked to God, but there are several links to God. And the thing is, you and I represent a link. Sometimes we get the privilege of being the first link, the first person that can show them who Jesus is and what Jesus looks like, the first person to talk to them about Jesus. Sometimes we get the privilege of being the last link, the one that leads them, and they get them to that place where they say, I'm ready to give my life to Jesus. But more often than not, I think God in his grace actually puts us somewhere in the middle so that we don't know which link we are, so that we don't get credit for, oh, I'm the first person or I'm the last person, but I'm just somewhere in the middle and I'm just faithful to what God has called me. But here's the thing. if I'm here and I don't fulfill my part, it's not to say that I'll never get to God, but what am I risking? What am I jeopardizing? Because I don't know where I'm at in this process. I just know I'm a link somewhere on this chain. And if I do my part, then I'm moving them down the chain to get them to God, whether or not I'm the first or the last. It doesn't matter, or if I'm somewhere in the middle. But if I can fulfill my part of being this chain, of being the link on this chain, it's going to make a difference in someone else's life. In fact, when you look back at our story and look at this woman back at verse 39, here's what it says about her, okay? It says, many Samaritans from the village. Now, it says, believe in Jesus. Now, read these next three words out loud. Ready? Go. Because the woman. They believed in Jesus because the woman. Because she recognized, I'm one of these. I have a part in this. I'm responsible for this. This has to be urgent. This has to be personal. This has to be public. Because it matters. My role in this person's life matters. My friendship with them matters. My love for them matters. And it matters because there's a God who they matter to first. Yeah. And so as we close today, what I'm asking you to consider is, who are you going to take Jesus to? Not theoretically, not hypothetically, but actually. I'm not asking you to take it to a whole village. I'm not asking you to convert the whole city. But who are three people in your life that God has placed you there for a purpose? And that purpose, just be a link on the chain. Take them one link closer to Jesus, one link closer to God. Who will you actually do this for? Who will you actually do this with? Who is it that God has placed in your life? And let's act on it. Let's not just talk about it. Let's be about it. Let's live it out. Okay? Let me pray for us as we close.